For years, TSIA has been imploring technology providers to stop slinging features and focus on the business impact of a technology solution. That has resulted in lots of technology companies professing they are focused on business outcomes, yet underneath the covers, they still struggle to connect the dots between their technology and customer business outcomes. Will AI close this gap for technology providers? I am Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Today, I will be talking with Chad Quinn, the CEO of Ecosystems, a software company that is fixated on helping technology providers prove the business value of their technology. So we're going to get this insight engine humming. Welcome, Chad. It's so nice to meet you. It's our first time chatting. And I just want to open up, how long has Ecosystems been around and what was the catalyst for starting the firm?
Well, first, Thomas, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be with you. So Ecosystems has been in existence for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And a long journey on value, a love affair around value. Mm-hmm. I guess the catalyst, you could say there's probably two catalysts for me. One was personal, and that was watching an incredibly talented, valuable employee lose her job to a 100-gallon saltwater fish tank, which sounds odd, but actually happened, in which all of what she had done for the organization and kind of the value she was communicating in terms of her impact and her connectivity and connection and warmth with people was not seen. So it kind of taught me the very strong lesson that when your value is not clear, bad things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was on a personal front. On the professional front, the catalyst was being in sales and watching how value is kind of like the language of growth. It's if a company sees value, it's growing, it's innovating, it's winning in the market. If a provider is helping to co-create value, it's winning deals and expanding. So I watched how this magical thing called value was transforming relationships, but then often thought it as very much kind of isolated, not democratized. Why can't we all be doing this? Why can't we all have value conversations? And so the premise of the point was, could we take something that feels very amorphous and very contextual, like customer value, and put a framework around it, put structure around it, so that more people could do it and more relationships could be based on value?
Well, that's fantastic because, I mean, this topic of value, defining value, I mean, it can be very nebulous, right? And people throw that word around a lot. And so the reason I reached out to you originally is because right now we're researching how AI can impact workflows related to revenue generation. And one of our members said that their customer success organization was doing some really interesting work with your company to define the business value of their solutions, right? Exactly what you're talking about. And I do want to start there on this, again, smushy term of value. When you think about business value for a customer, you typically think of, you know, are you reducing their costs? Are you increasing their revenues? Are you reducing risk for them? So I'm curious, how does Ecosystems define business value?
Yeah, I love the question. I guess where I would start, Thomas, is that we definitely encourage the tech providers that we work with to take a very holistic view around value. If the listeners would kind of visualize, you could think of it as kind of three interlocking categories. And so the first category is exactly how you referenced it, kind of corporate value. So how are we helping a company impact their revenues? How are we helping them reduce their costs? How are we helping mitigate risks? So that would be kind of the first circle, would be corporate value. But then there's what we would call job value. How can we help the company we're working with and the individuals in that company around their job value? So that could be streamlining a process, making them more effective, streamlining the workflow and creating more efficiencies within the job. It could even be the marketability of working with that company. I often think about the times where people will say, I'm a Cisco certified engineer, right? So there's the affiliation of being with Cisco gives me some marketability, and that's a value of being associated with it. So that second category would be job value. And then the third, and oftentimes providers, they kind of look at us incredulous a little bit of when we introduce this third category, which is personal value, because they think, well, is that really appropriate in a business setting? And absolutely it is, because we're human beings and we're working with fellow human beings. And so that third value around personal value is it could be the learning and development that I get in working with you as a provider. It could be the network expansion of the people you're introducing me to. It could be the fact that we have shared values. And I love the fact that you have a sustainability initiative and you're conscious of your footprint. And I want to be affiliated with a company like that. So corporate value, kind of the hard-hitting economic metrics, job value around efficiency and effectiveness, and then personal value around the image and the status and the shared values that you have with this individual. Those are the three dimensions that we look for in working with a provider and helping them align to their customers on.
So I'm going to play that back because I think this framing is really important on this topic. And again, those three circles that you're describing is you're working with a technology provider and you're saying, hey, if we're going to connect your solution to value, let's look in all three of these circles. Do I have that right? So how are you unlocking? Okay, perfect. And I'm just going to put a hypothesis out here because you've been doing this value work for many years. So the job value ultimately feeds corporate value because if you are making people more efficient, et cetera, you're going to be able to connect those dots. Hey, we're taking cycles off here. We're reducing time to do this stuff. So to me, that's a really clear line, right, that you can draw right back to corporate value. The personal value to me is going to show up ultimately in things like attrition, et cetera, right? If you're saying, look, our solution is creating personal value for your employees, we're part of that. And, you know, that means your employees are more engaged, they're happier, they're going to be with you longer. Because I, you know, I'll be sort of the Scrooge of value here. I mean, I think ultimately the people writing the checks, right, end up ultimately running toward corporate values. That's what I need to understand. If I'm going to renew and write you a big check for your technology solution, I have to get corporate value. And I think if you can keep connecting things back to that as strongly as possible, that's probably a stronger case for your solution. But I'm curious what your experience is.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there is a lot of interconnections, like you talked about, that the job value can definitely have a bearing on corporate value. Let me use TSIA because I love the organization. There is a community value to TSIA. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of providers doing this now. How do I create a community where I can bring in like-minded professionals that are passionate on points? So when we work with providers, we're encouraging them to look at all of these connections because your community and helping them become a learning developed organization, helping them bring together like-minded professionals focused on problems that we all share. Yeah. That's an aspect of affinity and value that people have to an organization. Yeah. And that's one where appropriate and with the right stakeholders is critical. Another example would be sustainability. Sometimes we'll talk to providers and they're like, well, Chad, we just have to have these hard metrics around cost savings. Well, if you're aligning to somebody's sustainability footprint and you're helping them lower their footprint, that has tremendous organizational alignment and value, and you need to go get credit for that and be able to map towards that. So we do look at these three categories and see where you can make logical connections to them. And what we found is, you know, kiddingly, the visual I would use, Thomas, is if you have a diving board value proposition, you've got one column, you're going to go up and then you're going to go down. Like if you try to win just on cost and it doesn't work, you're done. But if you have a Parthenon value proposition where you have multiple pillars, you know, you're aligning into corporate value, you're aligning into job value, you're aligning into personal value, you're going to be much stronger in your case and in your relevancy to that customer. So we always look to work with the providers to explore the different circles and make sure where appropriate you make those connections to more holistically be relevant to that customer.
So let me play back some of that. First of all, I'll open by just giving you testament to your assertion around community as an example, right? Which is, it's not a hard financial metric, but do people value that? And quite frankly, I see this within the TSIA world. So, you know, companies get on our platform. One of our foundational value propositions is around operational benchmarking, which is all designed about getting to the hard numbers, right? And hey, here you have a gap here. You can, you know, work on it with this practice, whatever. But we have members and members who've been on the platform for years who don't take advantage of that, but they're here because they want to be part of the community. And that's the value proposition for them. it kind of blows my mind sometimes because I'm like, well, wait a minute, you have access to this hard one, right? And so I agree with what you're saying. I mean, community, you know, cannot be discounted. It's something that they really do value, and you should promote that. The other thing I think that you wisely put on the table here is that your value proposition cannot be single-threaded. That is a really good point. And, you know, the race to the bottom on cost, which a lot of technology providers are going through right now, right? I love the diving board analogy you gave. It's that's the only thing you're hanging on. Yeah. It's like, that's it. You know, you're sunk. You're not the low-cost provider. Identifying multiple threads so you can stand up and say, look, you know, we're not just a one-trick pony here, but it takes work. And that leads to the next question I want to get to is, and I opened up with this observation that so many technology providers are swinging around this word of business outcomes and value realization. And that's because they know they don't want to hang on the feature functionality value proposition. They don't want to hang on low cost providers. So they're trying to get out of that box, but they struggle, really struggle connecting how their solution is going to unlock value and again, stand up multiple pillars that they could talk about value. So super curious. So how does your platform connect, you know, technology solution, whatever that solution is, piece of hardware, software, whatever, to these areas of business value that you've been describing?
Yeah, love it. So Ecosystems has a collaborative web platform that is really a communal workspace for providers, customers, and partners to co-create value together. Thomas, the underpinnings to the platform is what we call the value validation framework. So it's kind of six elements that we've studied that need to come together for a customer to feel like they've made a high quality, low regret decision. Okay. They feel good about and confident about the decision. So the framework is, and this is probably, there's no, you know, Star Wars insight to the framework. Mm-hmm. These are all things we've heard before, but we've watched these get stitched together in a way where the customer feels strength and commitment around it. And when that takes place, the confidence levels go higher. So it's objectives. What are we trying to achieve? And it would underscore, it's common objectives, because I can't tell you how many times we go into a situation where the provider thinks that everybody on the other part of that Zoom call are aligned on the common objectives that they're trying to achieve. That's not often the case. So common objectives, tactics, root cause problem, metrics, targets, and timelines.
Okay.
Objectives, tactics, root cause problem, targets, metrics, and timelines. Those six elements, when they come together, are incredibly powerful to start to have the provider link in or become relevant to this framework. And their relevancy is going to come into, well, let's look at the root cause problem. Let's identify what core capabilities we have in our offering to help address that problem. And that would rise to the level of a tactic that would then ladder up to an objective that a customer could focus in on. So we present this framework that helps honestly contextualize the problem that the customer is trying to focus in on. And then it allows the provider to start to create the linkages on where they can support and enable and amplify the objectives that the customer is looking to achieve.
So let me digest that there in playback. So first of all, you're putting a platform in play that people can all commonly access. So I'm assuming you said the customer can access it, the technology provider, if there's partners involved. So we're all going to have the same window around what we're trying to do here. And then I'm really curious, okay, what are the business objectives of customer, what you're trying to achieve? Let's get that on the table in black and white. And like you said, that first step, you may be finding that the customer's conflicted within themselves around what their objectives are, right? That's fair, right? So hey, we got to work through that, because if you're not lined up, we're sure in the hell not going to get you across the goal line if you're not even running the same place. So okay, so you're getting them to get these objectives on the table. Put a little meat on the bone. I'm a hardware provider, right? I'm trying to connect business value. And I need to somehow shape these objectives so it's something that I can influence. Right. So how do you basically see that conversation with the customer? Is there sort of like in the sales cycle, you said you want to accomplish these things. That's our starting point for the objectives? Or, I mean, how do you just frame it in? Because if a customer says, you know, my objective is to open, you know, a retailer and I want to open, you know, 200 more stores in the next year. And this hardware provider says, but actually, I'm not even part of your world. Right. I'm over here working in corporate with some whatever. Right. So how do you make sure that that's in line?
Yeah, it's a great question. And so let's go into those six elements, and I'll tell you where we see the most elite value sellers focusing in on to help that that issue, Thomas, that you rightfully bring up. And it's very interesting. It's opposite for how you see many people showing up. So many sellers will show up and they'll go right into kind of a solution orientation mm-hmm. and a demo and a pitch. And every time they've got many people on a Zoom call, they're showing what they can offer and mm-hmm. kind of trying to convince them. The elites that are really proficient in value selling are not even talking solution. They're at that third rung in the value framework, which is problem, root mm-hmm. cause problem. And they're actually putting that problem on trial. So they're hosting what I would call a problem workshop with the right stakeholders. And their intent is to be very poignant. Is this a problem? Can we solve it mm-hmm. as the provider? And is it worth solving now? And mm-hmm. so they're actually quantifying the cost of the problem and trying to create a magnitude around that problem and then link it up to what are enabling tactics that the organization can take and how does this align to an objective for the company. Mm-hmm. But the area that the key focal point in the first stage for a provider to be relevant is actually putting the problem on trial, workshopping it with the right stakeholders, helping them quantify the cost of inaction around this problem, and then being able to say very clearly in a discovery process, can we work here? Is this, mm-hmm. you know, back to your point, the thing I never want to be as a provider is the number one solution to the number three problem. Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. I want to be the number one solution to the number one problem. Yep. So that problem quantification is where that relevancy starts to map to. And that's where the discernment from the provider to say, if it's a priority, if it's a high cost of inaction, and it's something we do successfully, then this warrants us moving forward in the framework and working with the given company.
That, yeah. So this is a really fun conversation. So let me put a couple thoughts on the table here. So in sort of rationalize what you could just put on the table about how the best value sellers do it. You know, the concept of consultative selling, where you go in, you ask the customer, well, what's keeping you up at night? And the customer says, well, this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let me go away and I'll come back and here's my, you know, bespoke solution for you. And I'm going to try to fit into that, right? So I personally have felt that, you know, that type of open-ended selling is not a winning approach for a lot of technology providers because there are problems that sometimes you aren't related to, right? And so being too open-ended and also coming up with too much of a bespoke solution, I think ultimately is not a winning, scalable, profitable strategy for a lot of technology providers. And especially nowadays, I think customers have less appetite for tons of customization and, you know, snowflake solutions. On the other end, and I love how you put this on the table, if you just come to the table and, you know, the classic, I have a hammer and I'm going to hit a nail. And so I believe that your biggest problem, I love the way you said it, you know, your biggest problem is that you have that nail that needs pounded in the ground. And I'm going to tell you why I'm the best hammer to do that. And that could miss the mark because that may not be their biggest problem. And so this middle ground that you put on the table of coming in and say, okay, let's start with, I'll give you a scenario, I don't know if this is how it unfolds, but again, let's say a retailer trying to open a bunch of stores and you say, okay, but what's preventing you from opening stores as quickly as you want to right now? What is slowing you down? Then they can say, well, it's this, this. And then as the technology provider, you listen to, wow, that one right there, we can absolutely move the needle for you. And by the way, if that is the biggest boulder, the biggest friction point preventing you from opening those stores on time, then now we have a really interesting conversation going on. Is that the fair?
You framed it wonderfully. And think, Thomas, like, just think about the scenario that you've just outlined. As a customer, because we always want to put our customer's hat on, am I willing to sit down with a Chad or a Thomas to talk about problems that are relevant to me with some of my colleagues? Yes. Do I want to honestly sit down and see yet another demo of your platform? No. So even the very nature of showing up and saying, I'm here to talk problems that you have to address and help you prioritize and quantify those problems, we're more apt to get A, engagement, and B, stakeholders to come in. You know, we've actually at Eco helped write emails that are sent from the champion to the other stakeholders, finance, procurement, IT, business, come to this problem workshop mm-hmm. where we can discuss and prioritize. And so the beauty of this is it's exactly what the customer is faced with and has to work through the prioritization. it's solution agnostic. It's not pushing any capabilities too early in the process. But then to your point, once I understand that surface area of the problems, and I see which ones have the highest cost of inaction, and then I can make the judgment call as to the legitimacy and merit I have in helping solve that problem, then it becomes a wholesome process. I'm getting credit as being the facilitator to the problem workshop, and then I'm helping lead back to some of my core capabilities if it's a problem that I can help solve.
And I have to believe that the better you get at that motion as a technology provider, right? Of being, I love your phrasing there. I'm going to come in solution agnostic. We're going to identify the surface area. We're going to identify what the big root causes are. We're going to zero in on which ones we can move the needle on and promote around that. Once you start doing that, customer after customer, and another thing we believe is technology providers, whether they like it or not, are going to have to get more vertical. They're going to have to understand vertical industries at a deeper level. And so I'll keep hammering on this simple retail. Once I start working with, you know, more and more retailers, the pattern recognition is going to get pretty strong for me. So I have to believe that, especially in your software and your tools, you're saying, oh, by the way, we've got some framing here. If you're going to go talk to a retailer, here's what the most common root cause is. Here's the thing you're going to be listening for. But you're also putting on the table a nuanced approach. Don't go in there and just say, boom, I think this is your problem. I want to solve it. You got to go through the process of understanding what is truly their biggest problem. Is that, did I categorize that?
100%. 100%. Yeah. You know, we touched on this earlier. Oftentimes, we as providers, I put myself in this category because I'm not immune to this thinking. It happens to all of us. Sometimes we feel like our biggest opportunity is to make ourselves relevant to the customer. Right. So we always are leading with that. We're always trying to convince. We're in convince mode. Well, honestly, the customer has greater confidence issues in aligning amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. And so when that switch fires off, that it's not us aligning to them, we're going to do that eventually, but it's them aligning amongst themselves, feel more confident. This value validation framework, do we have the common objectives? Do we understand the core tactics? What is the root cause problem? How are we going to measure this thing with metrics? What are realistic targets and what are actionable timelines? When I, as a customer, go through those six elements and not only feel good about what's being put in place, but my colleagues are reinforcing it and we're aligning to it, we leave that interaction with confidence and we give credit to whoever helped facilitate that session with us. And that's what the best providers do. They see themselves as, I'm not here to try to convince you to buy. I'm here to help you decide. And in that deciding, I'm going to decide myself if I can help you and where. And then I'm going to work through that journey with you.
As I listen to you, and I'm be very curious what your experiences are here and the coaching you give to your technology providers on this, is, you know, you're talking about a journey. You're absolutely describing a, you know, we'll call it a value journey, where you have to be willing to herd the cats of the customer. You got to be willing to have the patience to be advocating for these types of sessions. I mean, I'll just play devil's advocate here. You just go to a prospect or a customer and you say, look, you know, we really should do this problem session. We already know the problem. We already know what the problem is. We don't need to talk about this. We got to go, go, go. You know, and if you're not ready to go, I got to find somebody else, right? So what tactics do you find there to get everybody, your clients on the technology side, as well as their end customers, to lean into this type of approach?
That's such a good question. No easy answer, but I'll say many times you can talk to the providers, the sellers, and you put a mirror up and you say, tell me of a time where they went go, 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 and then they went stop, stop, stop in later stages,
of course,
because they didn't have alignment. All of a sudden, we're in a final stage of negotiation and we don't even know the problem we're solving or why we're solving it. So oftentimes you can kind of revisit that with a seller and they'll very quickly, she'll say or he'll say, yes, I have to slow down to go fast. If I don't have this good foundation, it's going to pop up somewhere later in the stages. The customer can be challenging sometimes because they may have that, hey, we know what we're solving for. And I think that's where your point is so well taken, that you as a provider can be a connector. Hey, we've heard other companies like yours, and here's what they're saying about their problems. And you start to introduce some nuance to the problem, or you start to educate on the problem, and suddenly they start to feel like, maybe we haven't thought through the root cause on this. Yeah. And so I think it's a combination of recognizing for the seller that if you really want a fast deal, you do not go through these steps at a breezy level because it'll come back and hurt you. And look at all the research, 40 to 60% of the forecasted deals stall because of no decision. That's because somewhere in this value validation framework, objectives weren't identified, tactics weren't clear, metrics weren't actionable, timelines weren't realistic. Somewhere that we kind of short-circuited that process, and now we've got to revisit it. That hurts us as the provider, but it also hurts the customer. We're one step further from solving the right problem and getting to the impacts that we all want to get to.
I'll give you another point of validation here, and something that, you know, I personally have learned the hard way working with leadership teams. And there's a simple framework I use with them called the how-to flywheel. And that is, people want to get to the how-to. I get this question all the time. Like, how do you do dot, dot, dot? You know, how do you stand up a new as a service business? How? They want to get right into it. What I have learned painfully is, and this is exactly the square you're on, is you can jump into the how, but you're probably going to stop, start, train's going to come off the track. Because why? Because everybody isn't convinced on the why. So the way this flywheel, you know, I paint this flywheel, is I say, look, there's the big wheel is getting everybody aligned on the why. Why are you doing dot, dot, dot? Are you really leaning in on the business value or potential? And if you guys aren't clear on the why, then you're wasting your time jumping to the how-to. Again, I think that's, you know, philosophically the right approach. As you know, there's no easy answers there. I think leadership teams, managers, they have a tough time pausing and doing that. But it pays massive dividends if you really take the time there. It's interesting. I think we are very aligned philosophically, right, on the approach here on connecting value. But let's get a little bit to the technology side of it and making it easier. Because again, I think, you know, a lot of people could be listening and shaking their heads up and down saying, yeah, I want to do this, but again, it's so hard and blah, blah, blah. Can the technology make it easier? And I was, you know, doing a little bit of homework and looking out on your website. One of the things that caught my eye was this virtual value engineer that you have called Vivian, and that is enabled by AI. So how can technology help us here?
Yeah, great question. So Vivian, virtual value engineer, think about Vivian as something that overlays the entire interactions between a provider, customer, and partner. Okay. So Vivian is this central analysis that's occurring. And we recently, under kind of machine learning context with her, we had her look at 2,960 opportunities in the CRM. So these were anonymized across five different providers. And Thomas, they were kind of full life cycle. So they came into the CRM as a discovery, and they went full maturity in the conversation, either to a close one or a close law. And so, you know, you're onto something when your hypothesis was radically refuted. It's not relevant. So we thought when we put Vivian on this problem, we're going to study all these value conversations between a provider and a customer and a partner. And one of our hypotheses was, okay, well, we bet that if they have a very strong ROI, that there will be some correlation between a compelling ROI and a positive sales outcome, a win rate. Zero.
I was going to say, I wanted to guess so bad. I'm going to say, well, let me guess. That correlation does not exist.
There's no correlation between that. Yeah. And so that was fascinating to us, that literally none of the calculations, none of what is often been touted
the gold
as,
standard.
Oh, you've got to show a strong ROI and convince the customer. Sign
what's
hard,
going
free
on?
Copies. What Vivian found was that honestly, two major things had a predictive impact to win rates. Number one, and this is always common sense, but it's not common practice, to the extent that the customer and the provider were co-creating value across that continuum, objectives, tactics, metrics, targets, and timelines, a 3.4x increase in win rates. So the very act of collaborating, coming in and live editing on the wording of the outcome, going into the metrics and changing them and doing what if scenarios and looking at them from different perspectives, that collaboration thread had a causal impact to win rates. And the second is what we talked about and touched upon already is the diversity of value, back to corporate
multiple
value,
pillars,
job value, and personal value. The more the provider had looked at a wider surface of aligning on value, the greater the win rate. So if I just left it to cost, I had less success. But if I looked at cost and risk mitigation and job value, and even positioned them being part of our community and a thought leader on personal value, I had a higher win rate correlation. So collaboration and value driver diversity, if you will, were major learnings from the platform. So now to your good question, well, how does that help us? Well, now what Vivian can do is prescriptively in this guided workflow, she can help both provider and customer collaborate at the right times. This is a default business case. Nobody's changed any of these inputs. This is not tracking well for either you, the provider, or for the customer for that matter. So you need to look at collaborating first internally with your key subject matter experts and then externally with your customer. Or you've only chosen one or two value drivers and they're not realistic and they're not credible and that's only one dimension of value. So now Vivian is creating this kind of taking a best practice and making it a common practice for the salesperson through the intelligence and her guiding through that experience.
That is super cool. So I want to click into the technology piece of it in a second, but backing up a little bit in terms of your findings with the analysis, I think for the audience here, I mean, you made some really profound points there. Number one, this gold standard of ROI, right? That as long as you can demonstrate, like, and if you're a salesperson on this call, I mean, how many times have you lost a deal and you're saying, gosh, we showed them this unbelievable ROI that they were going to get in 2 years. Like, how in the hell could they walk away from that? Because people don't ultimately make that business decision just based on an ROI because of the things you said earlier. If they weren't personally invested in that business case, if they didn't feel, people don't make a decision just based on a number. And so that, you know, your analysis and those deals you looked at showed that. And then secondly, the more robust the value conversation is, when someone is making a decision between two providers, right? They can say, yeah, but this provider, oh, by the way, you know, they also have this thing over here and they talked about how they could help. So now it's starting to tip the scale, right? And so it's not like we're not just on the diving board of price or whatever the main thing was. They're going to be thinking us about us in a positive, broader context. And so the more chips we can put on that scale on value, you know, does matter is what you're saying. It really does matter. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think that is all, you know, very insightful for the audience. But, you know, the other thing that I'm personally really excited about and what you're describing here with the technology, and I don't know if people realize how fast this is moving, but we are now already at a place where, you know, I know at our company and, you know, probably most of the companies you're working with, the vast majority of customer interactions are now being recorded. You have that information, that data. You bring that in, you have the information in your CRM systems. And the days where you would sit down in a room and ask your salespeople, so like, what happened? Like, why did we lose a deal? Or what do you think is going to happen with this deal? And everybody is making up their own story based on the last conversation they had with the customer, right? And if you're the, you know, the CRO or the head of sales, you're kind of pulling your hair out going, oh my God, who do I believe? Do I don't know if I, you know, it's so gut-wrenching. We are getting to a world where we're not going to guess. We're going to leverage really in-depth analysis like this. Like you said, we're going to be able to look at our past to help predict our future and then be proactive with our account teams like you're describing and say, hey, I'm telling you right now, dude, you may think this thing is right on track, but it's not. This is heading to probably a loss. So let's do the intervention now. I mean, that I think is where technology is going to be a game changer, you know, in terms of our revenue generating interactions. And I'm curious because I can also tell you that the sales side of the house, the revenue generation side of the house are the laggards on adopting AI technology right now. So talk a little bit about, you have this cool tool, it can start to provide these kinds of unbelievable insights. How are you getting people to lean into that, right? To get, you know, experienced salespeople to go, no, I are you kidding me? I know better. I trust right, me, right. This thing's on track.
Right. No, and I think it's an evolving storyline. Yeah. And I think you're so spot on with the implications of what this is going to be. And so what they like about this is, listen, you show me based on empirical evidence when I should be collaborating and how I should be collaborating. So they're very open to that reality because Vivian has kind of a robustness to her data model. Now we've got about 35,000 active users in our platform. Mm-hmm. And so she is constantly being refined in terms of the recommendations. Honestly, I think what it helps the veteran seller is to say, let me do what I love, which is to have great conversations and be able to have that ability to empathize with my customer and help them and support them. Why I came into sales is and liberate some of the mundane aspects of it that helped me elevate to the more humane aspects of it in terms of my role. So I'll give you an example. And this is early stages, but Vivian is trying to help with vertical value selling.
Yeah.
So if I go in and if I choose the healthcare box in the Eco platform, well, then the KPIs should be very nuanced to nurse turnover, right? As opposed to if I'm in insurance, it may be claims rate. Yep. Or if I'm in retail, it might be same store sales. Or if I'm in hospitality, it could be occupancy rate, right? Yep. So having the ability to have Vivian condition a version one that shows these are metrics that matter. These are common objectives that this industry looks at. Now, this isn't to say this is definitive, but it starts to give that seller an intelligent starting point to come in an industry orientation and then use the power of collaboration to iterate and refine. But that's a lot of work that they had to do
before,
up front in the old world that now creates a very credible version one out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, you're on a thread here. We've talked about this before in Tectonic with other guests. I mean, AI, I do believe, is an accelerator for verticalization. And again, we believe verticalization is going to be important for most technology solution providers. They've got to be more in tune. Like you said, you know, I'm talking to a healthcare provider or a hospital, and they care about these metrics with their nurses, and I cannot have a tin ear to that. And so it's hard to, you know, take people hiring from the industry or how do you get them there. AI is a game changer there, because you can make somebody who's like, hey, I'm a really good, you know, account person or salesperson, give me a first 1.0. Also, right. What's going to happen is that salesperson is going to be able to interact with a tool and say, well, you know, what are they going to be their top questions? I mean, they're going to be able to get a lot of insights where before, like, well, what were they going to do? Go on the internet and search for hours and hours and hours and research what to do there? And it's going to be right there at their fingertips. And so, again, we've talked about this previously in this podcast, but, you know, examples of AI helping customer success teams verticalize as they work. Now you're talking about salespeople verticalize their offers. So I think that is going to be super powerful. And Jed, I think that the go-to-market motions are 3 to 5 years from now, like, we aren't even going to recognize them. I think if you're an account person right now, you're in a customer-facing role, and if you're sitting there thinking AI's it's impacting support people, or it's impacting engineers, or it's impacting, that doesn't really impact me. I completely disagree. Completely disagree.
Yeah, we're going to go through a massive reimagining of the go-to-market model. And I like how you said it one time, Thomas, it's not that your job's going away, it's just changing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And I remember you saying that point, and I think it's so prescient that, look, you're going to be able to do different aspects, your creativity, your empathy, the ways that you collaborate, the softer side of facilitating these problem workshops and how you include people and how you make people feel heard and valued. That all gets front and center in this new world. And so there is an exciting next step for you, but recognize that some of these foundational elements that used to be kind of drudgery, archaeological digs to go find this kind, it's not, you know, with Vivian, you'll have a version one value discussion with minimal inputs.
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, it's a game changer for people. So I am curious, you know, when you get a tool like this in place, so how do you connect the business benefit of your tool to your customers? Is it things like, is it better win rates? Is it expansion rates? I mean, how do you typically connect the dots for your value proposition?
Yeah, great question. So we do right now across our community, we're seeing anywhere from a 2 to 3x increase in win rates when the platform's used. And when that collaboration feature is really dialed in, where it's not just a, you know, PDF generator, but it's a true collaboration with the customer. Mm-hmm. So win rates is a major tracking metric for us. We're seeing about a 7.9% increase in renewal rates because this is also the value realization conversation for the check you wrote us. What did you get in hard-hitting impacts that you can appreciate? And then the cross-sell upsells, probably anywhere between 30 to 50% increase in the expansion rates, because once I've earned the right to grow based on showing that value, now I can tee up a creative value in different parts of my portfolio to sell into that account. So win rates, we're looking at renewal rates, and expansion are kind of the three that we measure against our community at large.
I know from talking to so many of the TSI members, such a focus right now on their install base for growth, because net new logo is super hard to come by right now. And so they're like, look, if I'm going to grow, I have to grow with my existing customers. And, you know, what you just articulated there, one way to grow successfully with these customers, which means i.e. renew them and ideally expand, is to be on, I'll call it a value journey with them.
Yes.
You know, you want to be on an ongoing value journey. You just don't want to show up at renewal and say, hey, I want you to renew. And oh, by the way, here's all this new stuff I want you to buy. You want to be on this journey. So when you were renewing, you have tons of confidence they're getting the value, and you've been identifying along the way incremental ways that you can add value. And so I think, again, people have to think about it as an ongoing journey, not an event, a sales event when the customer's renewing.
Well put. And it is that continuous conversation, because think about it. In 90 days, your customer's value validation framework can change. Their tactics could change. Their objectives could change. So we have to constantly be going back in there and kind of revisiting what was the priority or aligning to the emerging priority. Maybe there's an acquisition, an M&A event. Maybe they're looking at a new partnership. So that kind of continuous value review concept of calibrating and aligning is critical going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Because things change quickly within your customers. I'm watching the clock here, but there's one other question I want to ask you, because it's starting to come up in discussions with other members. And this is related to pricing and value. So there's no doubt that there is pressure on, you know, hardware and software, you know, sort of commoditizing at the feature function level, right? I mean, tons of people have that feature. That's not enough to get a premium price. And so what do you see down the road in terms of how technology providers price their solutions to keep margin in?
Yes. Yeah, great question. Well, the book that you wrote with JB had a profound impact, Digital Hesitation. And in that book, you guys made a point that I'm seeing play out in our community. We've got a community of about 1,000 companies in what we call the customer value community. And the point that you made, and I'd love you, Thomas, to elaborate on it, was we're moving from an SLA, a service level agreement, to a VLA, a value level agreement. And we're starting to see companies for the first time introduce a business KPI as a component of the pricing.
Yeah.
Now, it's not radical where it's 100% of the pricing is predicated on that business KPI, but we're seeing some hybrid models where you'll have some fixed element to it. And this is, I think, being accentuated based on AI and the fact that we're moving away from these very long, kind of complicated workflows to much more of a transaction environment. So we can't think about the headcount being the way we price. We're going to have to think about discrete calls and how to assess value based on those calls. But we're seeing companies now start to bring that business KPI into pricing, which is exciting because it's where the customer wants to go. They want to understand that this is having impact, and it's ultimately where the provider needs to go. So I think we went from, and TSIA knows this far better than I, they've helped teach me on this. We've gone from the upfront license fixed fee one time, then there was the subscription fee. We've moved into consumption, and I think we're moving into outcome-based pricing over time. And it won't be radical, but it will start to look at hybrid models for the first time where the business KPI is included.
I'll give you sort of, you know, an update in terms of what I see on the pricing stuff. And you're right, in terms of that migration, just paying for the software and the right to use it. Again, there's a lot of pressure there. And what I am hearing now is AI is putting pressure on software companies, because you go to a customer and if you basically have user-based pricing, right? And the customer says, well, guess what? I kind of slowed down my hiring because I'm getting efficiencies from AI. Your renewal doesn't have automatic uplift, right? So now you have every company out there who has user-based pricing going, this is not going to work, right? So the next jump on, you know, over is people want to go to consumption-based, usage-based. But I've talked to enough of our, you know, our members that are on that model, is they say, hey, so the good news is customers are only paying for what they use. And if they're really using us a lot, you know, we're going to make, you know, more money. But customers quickly say, okay, yeah, I'm paying to use you, but what is the business value? So I think that this march to some type of value-based pricing is inevitable, whether we like it or not, right? But I also agree with what you just said, is this is not going to be like this revolution overnight. Customers aren't ready to do it exactly that way, but, you know, providers aren't ready. But what you just put on the table is that already you're starting to see it's getting in as a component. I think that's the first crack you know, the door gets cracked open, because, you know, ultimately that is the ground that customers are going to want to stand on. Like, if we don't have some conversation connected to value, then you're like a utility to me. And I'm going to pay the 100% cheapest amount I can possibly pay, whether I'm in usage-based pricing or user-based pricing. You're a utility to me. And I think that, you know, everybody who has a technology solution, they don't want to be the commoditized utility.
They can't. And they've got to start to experiment.
Yeah.
Like, I would encourage the listeners to experiment with some type of higher attribution value that you're going to sign up to.
Yeah.
Because it is, to your point, Thomas, I think it's inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, Chad, I really enjoyed the conversation today. Thanks so much for coming in. You're doing the right missionary work there to help technology providers connect the dots of value. I mean, it's super important. And I always end with a question of the day. And a question of the day for today is, how adept are you at connecting your technology to business value? Cheers, everybody.